Welcome to the Paycheck Paradox Podcast. This is the deep dive that cuts through all the noise to give you the crucial, high-leverage insights you really need to navigate the world of finance and, well, complex systems in general.
And before we get into today's material, we have to start with a mandatory and honestly a critical reminder. This deep dive is strictly for entertainment and educational purposes only.
That's right.
It is intended to explore market mechanics, concepts, but under no circumstances should any of this be taken as financial or investment advice. We are here to help you learn, not to tell you what to trade.
Absolutely. Okay, let's get into it. Let's unpack this core tension that I know every single listener has felt at some point.
Mm-hmm.
If you've spent any time at all in the stock market or really any highly liquid leveraged environment, and you've had that nagging suspicion, that little voice in your head telling you the entire system is somehow rigged.
That it's working against you specifically.
Exactly. Yep. Working against your individual success. Well, our source material today suggests that your deeply uncomfortable instincts are actually rooted in a very, very predictable reality.
Yeah, what we're diving into today isn't chaos. It might feel like chaos when you're in it, but it's really controlled, almost surgical execution.
Right.
We're looking at coordinated strategies that are designed by these institutional behemoths, what people call smart money.
Right.
And these strategies are built to exploit the predictable behavior of millions of retail traders. Their goal, plain and simple, is efficient wealth transfer. Their method is to manufacture the liquidity they need to place massive orders without moving the market against themselves.
We're talking about that universal, just maddening sensation. I think everyone knows it. It's the moment you buy a stock, maybe you're up a tiny bit, so you set a stop loss just below what looks like this, you know, impenetrable wall of support.
The obvious spot.
The obvious spot. And then for no clear reason, the price just spikes down, punches right through it, hits your stop, and forces you to sell for a loss.
Only to immediately, and I mean immediately, reverse and just rocket higher, leaving you completely stranded.
It's infuriating.
It is. And that phenomenon is so reliable, so common, that it actually has established institutional names. They call it the liquidity grab, the shakeout, or the more technical term, the stop hunt.
A stop hunt.
It's the precise mechanism that large institutions use to manipulate the available supply. They force panic selling from, well, from people like you, the retail cohort, all to secure these immensely lucrative buying opportunities for themselves.
So our mission today is pretty straightforward. We're going to do a comprehensive three-part exploration based on our sources. First, we need to understand the institutional need for this forced selling. I mean, what's the motivation that justifies these dramatic coordinated moves?
Right, the why.
Exactly, the why. Second, we will walk through the detailed, predictable five-step cycle of execution. We're essentially going to give you the blueprint of the hunt itself. And finally, and this is the most crucial part, we're going to detail five practical, tactical countermeasures that you, the retail trader, can use to stop being the low-hanging fruit in this high-stakes game.
Let's do it.
Okay, so to really get this, we have to start with the institutional problem, part one. Why do they even have to do this? Why manufacture their sellers? If a hedge fund with billions of dollars wants to buy a million shares of a good company, why don't they just, you know, click buy?
Well, the answer is one word: scale. Scale is the institutional investor's greatest advantage, you know, their massive capital, but it's also their single biggest mechanical hurdle.
An advantage and a weakness at the same time.
Exactly. The volume of their trades is so huge that they just cannot enter a position the way a retail trader can. When you buy 100 shares, the market doesn't feel it. It's a non-event.
Right, a drop in the bucket.
But when an institution tries to buy a million shares, the market registers that. It's like a seismic shock. It's a fundamental problem of supply and demand that they are actively trying to suppress.
So if they just hit the buy button, they're essentially showing their hand to the whole market.
That's the precise challenge. Let's say a multi-billion dollar fund tries to execute a massive buy order. Let's use our million share example for a mid-cap stock. If there aren't enough immediate sellers on the other side.
Which there usually aren't for a good stock everyone wants to hold.
Exactly. Their demand just overwhelms the available supply at the current price level. And this instantly drives the price up against their own buying pressure. They're literally fighting themselves.
And that price increase, the one they inflict on themselves just because of their size, that's the primary enemy of their profit margin, isn't it? That's what we call slippage.
That's right. And let's make the math really explicit here, because this is the core motivation for everything that follows. Imagine a stock is trading at exactly $100.
Okay.
The institution wants to purchase 1 million shares. So they place a massive market buy order. They might fill the first 200,000 shares at $100, but because they've just eaten up all the available sell orders at that price,
there's no one left selling at 100.
Right. So the next 200,000 shares they buy might execute at an average price of, say, $100.50. The next block at 101. It just keeps climbing.
So by the time they're finally done with their million share order, their average price isn't $100. It might be $101.50, even though the market was at 100 when they started.
Exactly. And you might think, oh, $1.50, what's the big deal? But that's $1.50 average difference on 1 million shares.
That's $1.5 million.
$1.5 million more than they intended to pay before the stock has even had a chance to move in their favor. That degree of slippage just erodes their potential profits so dramatically, it makes the entire trade fundamentally inefficient. They're essentially paying a premium to themselves just for being so big.
So their core problem isn't finding a good stock to buy. It's finding a tidal wave of supply. They need a huge crowd of willing sellers, all flooding the market at the same time at that stable low price they want. They have to accumulate without moving the needle up.
They require deep liquidity.
Yeah.
And when a stock is fundamentally strong and looks like it's setting up for a move higher, natural sellers are scarce. People are holding on, expecting it to rise.
Of course.
So the institution faces this this non-negotiable mandate.
Mm-hmm.
If natural supply isn't there, they must actively manufacture it. They have to locate the areas where potential sellers are hiding.
Or where their stops are hiding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then use market mechanics to force those sellers out of their positions.
And since we know that most retail investors, when they're faced with sudden, terrifying red candles, or when their automated stops get triggered, they instantly turn into forced sellers, well, the institutional solution becomes pretty clear. You induce fear and you trigger those stop orders.
That is the key insight. This manufactured necessity, this absolute requirement for deep instantaneous liquidity to facilitate their massive low-cost buying, that is the driving force behind the entire cycle we're about to detail.
So it's not even necessarily malicious in their view. It's just efficient.
From their perspective, it's a logistical problem. They're clearing the overhead resistance because their model's efficiency demands it. They have to execute the shakeout to make sure their accumulation phase is even profitable in the first place.
That reframes the whole thing. It's a logistical problem they solve using psychological manipulation. Okay, now that we understand the multi-million dollar why, let's get into the how. How do they actually pull off this clearance operation?
All right, so this brings us to part two, the mechanism. And the beauty, but also the danger of this cycle is just how predictable it is. It's a calculated, repeatable process, and it's designed to locate, trigger, and then absorb the capital of every trader who doesn't have the patience or, frankly, the sophistication to withstand the pressure.
We're moving from the big picture motivation to the step-by-step blueprint. Let's start with step one, which is basically the smart money doing its homework, mapping out where all the easy targets are clustered.
Step one. The setup. This is where they identify the liquidity pools. And this first step is entirely data-driven reconnaissance. Smart money institutions use these vastly sophisticated proprietary algorithms that are constantly scanning the entire market infrastructure for these so-called liquidity pools.
And this is where the irony really kicks in for the retail trader, isn't it? These pools are created precisely because everyone is reading the same trading textbooks.
Exactly right. The universal wisdom, what they teach you in every Trading 101 course, says to place your stop loss order just below an obvious support level.
Or under a recent swing low, or just beneath a big psychological round number, right? Like $50 or $100.
Right. And in theory, this is sound risk management. But it assumes a totally impartial market, which is, well, it's not reality.
But the institutions know. They know that if 20,000 individual traders are all reading the same book and using the same charting software, then all 20,000 of those stop loss orders are going to be clustered within pennies of that single, highly visible support line.
Correct. So to the retail trader, that stop loss is protection. To the institutional algorithm, that cluster is a massive, synchronized pool of readily available sell orders just waiting to be triggered.
It's a target.
It's a huge target. The depth of the order book reveals exactly how many shares will be foresold if the price just dips a few cents below that key level.
Whoa.
So the algorithms map these clusters. They often combine visible order book data with analysis of dark pool activity, and they can even correlate it against the usage of popular retail brokerages to estimate the size of the trap.
Wait, hold on. Let's pause on that for a second. The depth of that data. Are you suggesting they can essentially see a map where we, the retail traders, have basically put up a giant neon sign that says, hey, all our stops are right here at $49.95?
Not explicitly, no. They don't see your individual order. But it's close enough to not matter. They analyze the aggregate open interest and the volume profile of a stock. If a stock has been consolidating for, say, 3 months right above $50, and their data shows an unusual spike in open short interest, or if they see large internal flows that suggest accumulation is necessary,
then they know.
They know. They know that the biggest pile of available supply will be triggered by violating $49.99. That spot on the chart becomes a roadmap. It shows them the most efficient path to securing millions of cheap shares.
So the moment those pools are mapped, the setup is complete. And then they move to execution, which takes us to step two, the actual attack, the trap.
Right. Step two is the trap, or stop hunting in the flush. This phase is the active implementation of the hunt. Knowing precisely where the retail stops are clustered, the smart money initiates focused, coordinated selling pressure.
How focused are we talking here? I mean, do they need to just dump massive volume on the market to push the price down to that one line?
They use enough volume to nudge the price right to the edge, but critically, they rely really heavily on high-frequency trading HFT strategies to push it that final fraction of a cent.
So it's a precision strike?
It is. Imagine the retail stop cluster is at $49.90. They'll start selling aggressively, pushing the price from, say, $50.50 down to $49.91. That's the nudge.
And once it just touches $49.90.
The mechanism is immediate and it's self-reinforcing. Those thousands of pre-programmed stop-loss orders, they automatically convert into market sell orders.
All at once.
All at the exact same moment. And that sudden involuntary flood of selling pressure accelerates the downward move. The smart money only had to provide the initial push. The retail herd provides the fuel for the collapse.
So they spend a little capital to drop the price by 60 cents, and in return, the triggered stops drop the price another dollar for them. That's what creates that sudden deep red candle or that long volatile wick that we always see on the charts. It's a chain reaction.
It's a calculated cascade effect. They call it the flush. They've successfully flushed the market of all the immediate resistance that was provided by nervous holders and those automated stops. But often, the stops alone aren't enough to satisfy the sheer volume they need to buy.
So they need more sellers.
They need the emotional traders to join in. And that brings us to step three.
The panic.
The panic. Forced selling. This is the phase of pure psychological warfare. They have to turn automated selling into fearful, voluntary capitulation. They need traders to believe the stock is fundamentally broken.
Right. They need you to think it's going to zero.
Precisely. To get the immense volume of shares they need, the manipulators have to intensify the fear. They need the drop to look not just like a technical correction, but like a full-blown catastrophe. And one of the most notorious tactics they use, which is highly illegal but incredibly difficult to police in real time, is something called painting the tape.
Okay, help us understand what that actually means in the age of algorithms. That sounds like something out of, you know, a 1920s trading floor movie.
The concept is exactly the same, but the execution is all digitized now. It involves various accounts, usually under the umbrella of a few large institutions, selling shares back and forth to each other at successively lower prices.
They're selling to themselves.
Essentially, yes. They're executing what are called wash trades. They're not trying to profit on the short-term price difference. The sole purpose is to create the illusion of massive organic downward momentum and extremely high volume.
So when a retail trader, you are looking at your chart and you see a massive, thick red volume bar pop up, and it's happening at the same time the price is collapsing below a key support level, your immediate gut-wrenching conclusion is, wow, the smart money knows something I don't. This thing must be toast.
That is the intended psychological effect. The fabricated volume provides the cover story. And what's more, these engineered drops are frequently timed to coincide with or even be fueled by some vague negative headline.
Of course.
Maybe it's a generalized market rumor, a minor analyst downgrade, or they just exploit a moment of broad economic anxiety.
That makes perfect sense. The headline gives the fearful trader a reason for their panic. They can tell themselves, oh, I sold because of that downgrade, instead of admitting, I sold because I was scared and I got panicked out of my position.
And that is the entire point. The smart money uses the news as the perfect justification to accelerate the panic, the voluntary selling stampede that follows, the fearful traders joining the already forced out stop sellers. That provides the immense deep liquidity required for the next step.
Wow.
And it's really important to note, as our sources highlight, that while the final flush can happen in just a few minutes, this whole pressure campaign of steps 2 and 3 can actually be sustained over days or even weeks to fully clear out an area before the real move.
So the panic selling provides the ultimate manufactured supply. Now we finally move to the institutional payoff, step 4.
Step 4, the scoop. This is the moment of wealth transfer. The massive flood of panic selling provides exactly the liquidity they needed all along. Their algorithms aren't surprised by this price drop. They were specifically designed to both cause it and absorb it.
So while the price is just spiking down violently and everyone is freaking out, the institutional buy orders are just lying in wait. They are the only ones left in the market with dry powder and absolutely zero fear.
Precisely. They're waiting at the bottom of that panic zone with these colossal limit buy orders. And because the volume hitting the market from all the forced involuntary selling is so high, they can execute their huge accumulation orders quietly and very efficiently. The high volume lets them fill their bags without immediately pushing the price back up against themselves.
They are essentially turning the retail community's collective fear into a massive discount on the very shares they wanted to buy from the start.
And this movement, this isn't some new phenomenon. It's a highly recognized pattern in classical technical theory. In frameworks like the Wyckoff method, this aggressive move below a clearly established support level, which is designed to clear out all the weak emotional holders, is known technically as a spring.
It's a spring.
It's viewed as the necessary final shakeout. The market is cleansed of sellers, and that creates a near-perfect entry point for the professional operator.
So the shares are accumulated on the cheap, the resistance is cleared. Now, how do they monetize this? How do they turn this accumulation into profit? That must lead us into the final step, step 5.
Step 5, the rocket.
Yep.
Or the reversal and markup. Once the institutional algorithms confirm that their desired volume of cheap shares has been secured, that their, you know, bags are full, they immediately stop the artificial selling pressure. They just turn it off.
And since they just forced everyone who even thought about selling to actually sell, there's suddenly almost no resistance left overhead.
That's the key structural change in the market. The overhead supply, that massive stop-loss orders and nervous limit sell orders placed by retail traders who are just hoping to get back to break even, all of that has been systematically wiped out.
Which means?
Which means that when the price begins to recover, it faces minimal resistance. It can accelerate very, very quickly, creating that dramatic V-shaped upward move that we see so often.
This rapid move is often what leaves the recently stopped out retail trader just staring at their screen in absolute disbelief. They sold at $49.90, they watched it drop to $49, and now it's suddenly back at $51 and climbing fast.
And this is where the cycle achieves its final objective, the retail chase. Retail traders, now experiencing profound fear of missing out, FOMO, and this desperate need to get back into a trade, they now believe they missed.
They start buying again.
They rush to buy back in. They are chasing the stock at a significantly higher price than where they sold just hours or maybe days before. And this new wave of retail buying pressure serves one final profitable function for the institution.
It pushes their new position into profit.
It pushes their newly acquired shares immediately into significant paper profit. The cycle is complete.
This whole cycle, I mean, while it's so complex in its execution, it's just devastatingly simple in its objective. Let's synthesize this blueprint one more time for everyone listening.
It's a relentless pattern. It starts with consolidation, that's the setup, creating the targets. Then the trap, which is the stop hunt, violating that support. Then the panic, the forced selling that creates the supply. Then the scoop, their accumulation, buying everything on the cheap. And finally, the rocket, the reversal, where they use retail FOMO for profit.
If the market feels like controlled chaos, it's because this 5-part dance is recurring constantly across all liquid assets.
Well, absolutely.
Okay. Understanding this pattern is the first massive step toward defensive trading. Now, let's turn our attention to the countermeasures. How do we stop being the predictable victims in this institutional game?
Right. This is part 3. How to stop being an easy target.
Knowledge is only powerful when you can translate it into action. We now know the institutional blueprint, which means we can start to anticipate their moves. We can't match their capital or their speed, but our source material gives us 5 tactical adjustments we can make to neutralize their strategy.
And the core philosophy here really has to be abandoning predictability. That's the key. Institutional algorithms are built on statistical analysis of retail behavior. If you introduce unpredictability and patience into your strategy, you stop being the profitable low-hanging fruit.
Your goal shifts.
It does. Your goal shifts from winning every single trade to simply surviving the shakeout. That's it. Survive the shakeout.
So let's start with the most obvious point of attack, the place they exploit first and foremost, the stop-loss order itself.
Adjustment number one, rethink your stop-loss placement. The fundamental error, as we established back in step one, is placing your protective stop exactly at a clear support line or a clean round number. It's just an open invitation to be hunted.
You're basically painting a target on your own back. It's the equivalent of hiding your valuables under a glass box that's labeled valuables here.
Precisely. The actionable strategy here is simple in concept, but hard in practice. You have to give your trades breathing room. You must intentionally place your stop loss significantly below the obvious technical level. You need to factor in a buffer, a kind of volatility allowance, for the inevitable stop hunt.
But how much is enough? I mean, that's the million-dollar question, right? If I'm trading a volatile stock at $200, is 50 cents of buffer enough? A dollar?
Likely not, especially if $200 is a key round number that everyone is watching. The depth of the wick is always unpredictable. But you should place your stop at a level that you believe signals the genuine failure of your underlying thesis for owning the stock, not just the temporary volatility designed to take you out.
So it's a strategic retreat point, not just a technical line.
Exactly. If a support level looks too perfect, let's say it's at $100, you might place your stop at $98.50 or even $98. You're ensuring a 1.5% to 2% buffer that's designed to absorb the typical volatility wick of a standard shakeout.
That requires a lot of discipline, though, because it automatically increases your dollar risk if you don't adjust your share size. It forces you to accept the high probability that that perfect support line will be briefly violated.
It does. And that brings us directly to the next absolutely non-negotiable adjustment. Many traders resist a wider stop precisely because they are over-leveraged in the first place.
Adjustment number two, master position sizing.
Yes. Tight, obvious stop losses are almost always a symptom of poor position sizing, not poor chart reading. If a trader is in a position that is too large for their account, they must place a tight stop to limit their potential total dollar loss to an acceptable amount, say 1% of their capital.
The psychological barrier here is just greed, isn't it? Retail traders, we all want to maximize the number of shares we hold, hoping for that massive return, even if it forces us into a really high-risk, predictable placement for our stop.
That's the vicious cycle that the institutions exploit. They are relying on you trading too large and thus needing that visible, tight stop. To survive the manufactured shakeout, you must reduce your share size to afford a wider, safer stop.
Okay, let's run a quick example just to make it crystal clear. Let's say a trader decides their absolute maximum loss on any given trade is $500.
Okay.
If they initially try to enter a stock at $50 and they place their stop at $49, that's a $1 risk, they can buy 500 shares.
Correct. 500 shares times a $1 loss is $500.
But $49 is a magnet for the stop hunt. So if that trader now realizes they need to place their stop way down at, say, $47.50 to clear that liquidity grab zone, that's a $2.50 risk per share.
Right. They must dramatically adjust their position size.
So to maintain that same $500 maximum risk limit, they now have to divide 500 by 250. They can only buy 200 shares.
Exactly. They prioritize survival over quantity. The actionable strategy is this. Reduce your share size proportionately to afford the necessary breathing room for your trade. By maintaining the same total dollar risk while widening the stop percentage, you neutralize the institutional trap. Your goal is to be holding those shares when the rocket phase begins, and that requires surviving the volatility.
Okay, that makes sense. So, adjustment three. We noted that these liquidity grabs thrive on intraday panic, especially during the high volume openings and closings of the market. How do we defend against that real-time volatility?
Adjustment three is wait for confirmation. Don't panic intraday. The trap is that intraday violation. The stock plunges below support at 10:30 in the morning, triggers all the stops, and then quietly recovers by 3:30 in the afternoon, leaving that long, misleading wick on the chart.
And if you react immediately to that 10:30 a.m. drop, you've played right into their hands. You've confirmed their success.
You have. So the key countermeasure here is patience. It's about removing the impulse button from your equation. The actionable strategy is non-negotiable. You have to avoid impulsive decisions based purely on intraday price action. especially when a key level is being tested.
So a break isn't a break until the day is over.
A genuine, meaningful breakdown of support requires confirmation. You must wait for the daily close to confirm if the price is genuinely broken and critically closed below that key level before you make the decision to panic sell or cut the position.
That closing price acts as a filter. It just removes all the noise and the manipulation from the trading day.
Precisely. If the stock drops 3% below support midday, but then closes 1% above support, the level has held. The structure is intact. And that long wick on the chart is simply the evidence of a successful stop hunt. If you had an intraday stop, you were taken out. If you waited for the close, you survived.
Which is why many professional traders use mental stops or end-of-day stops only, rather than those hard automatic orders placed directly on the exchange.
It gives them the discipline and the time to verify if the move was manipulation or a genuine change in trend.
Okay. This next one feels like the hardest shift to make. It's about turning the trap into a personal opportunity.
Adjustment 4. Think like a buyer, not a victim. This requires the biggest paradigm shift of all. Instead of reflexively fearing that engineered drop below support, you have to learn to anticipate it, to see it as a clearance sale, mirroring what the smart money is doing.
So if I have really high conviction in a stock's long-term future, and I know that everyone else has their stop loss set at $100, I should actually expect that drop and plan to use it to buy more.
That is the actionable strategy, but it requires extreme risk management. This is not for every trade. This is for high conviction trades, where you believe the fundamental thesis is incredibly robust.
And where the risk of the stock going to zero is negligible?
Yes. For those specific trades, you can consider removing the stop loss entirely and replacing it with a limit buy order that's placed just below the obvious support zone.
Wait, okay, let's be very clear here. Removing a stop loss is inherently risky. You're saying this is only for a specific type of trade where you've already decided on your maximum capital allocation for that asset.
Absolutely. This tactic is reserved for conviction plays. By using a limit buy instead of a stop sell, you aim to become the liquidity provider, not the victim of the liquidity grab. If the price violates $100 and drops violently to $99 on panic volume, your limit buy order at $99 fills cheaply while everyone else is capitulating.
You are literally buying the stock from the people whose stops were just triggered.
You are positioning yourself to profit from the panic they engineered. The core idea is simple. The moment the chart looks the scariest and the news sounds the worst, which is precisely when that engineered flush is peaking, that is often when the bottom is being put in and the accumulation phase is happening. You have to train your emotions to lean into that fear with a preset mechanical plan.
You're setting a trap for the trap setters, using their forced selling to your advantage. It's a total reversal of perspective.
It is. Which leads to our final adjustment.
Adjustment five.
Beware the perfect setup. This one ties everything back to step one. It's about the institutional dependence on predictability. If a chart pattern looks too perfectly clean, it is probably designed to draw in the maximum number of predictable traders.
We're talking about those textbook consolidation patterns, right? A stock trading sideways in a super tight range, sitting right on top of a major moving average or a clean horizontal support line. Every chart service and social media account is pointing to it.
Exactly. When the entire retail market is focused on the exact same price level as the ultimate line of defense, that line is structurally guaranteed to be violated.
Why?
Because the institution knows that breaking that line is the most efficient way to access the supply they need. It's where the biggest cluster of stops will always be.
So the actionable strategy is to be deeply skeptical of the obvious. If a setup is being universally celebrated as too perfect, we have to anticipate the violence that precedes the actual move.
Yes. So instead of buying the stock at the support line, anticipating the bounce, which is the most crowded trade, you wait.
Patience again.
Wait for the predictable shakeout to happen first. Let the institutional hunting party break the line, clear the field, and take out all the weak hands. Only then, only after that, should you look to buy the subsequent recovery after the stock has successfully sprung back above that key technical level.
That requires a high degree of patience because it means you're going to miss the absolute lowest price point of the dip.
You will. You'll miss the bottom tick. But you drastically increase the probability of surviving the trade and joining the rocket phase. You exchange the risk of being caught in the trap for the certainty of a confirmed reversal. And this moves the retail trader's role from being a reactive victim to a proactive participant who actually understands the script of the market manipulation.
This has been a really comprehensive deep dive. This five-step cycle consolidation, trap, panic, scoop, and rocket, it really shows us that the market, especially in times of liquidity need, isn't random chaos. It's controlled chaos, and it's meticulously engineered by these massive capital players.
But the knowledge of this exact mechanism, it neutralizes its primary weapon. And its primary weapon is your emotional response.
Yeah.
You now understand that when the market is driving maximum fear and forcing panic selling, it is typically manufacturing supply for their accumulation, not signaling a genuine long-term disaster for the asset.
And this leads us to the final and I think most provocative thought that we have to leave you with today. Institutional success in this entire maneuver relies fundamentally on two things: your immediate reaction and your lack of patience. They are fast, but you have one immense non-algorithmic advantage that they cannot use against you.
And that advantage is time. If you utilize time by waiting for a daily close, for confirmation, by absorbing intraday volatility, and by sizing your position correctly to withstand the shakeout, you become too expensive and too unpredictable to hunt. The easiest way to win the liquidity game is simply by refusing to provide the liquidity when the institutions are forcing your hand.
So patience in this complex market really is the ultimate defense against high-speed manipulation.
It is.
We strongly encourage you to review your own trading habits, particularly the placement of those stop losses and how you react during periods of extreme intraday volatility, especially in light of this institutional mapping we've discussed.
Thank you for allowing us to guide you through this crucial deep dive into the hidden mechanics of market structure.
We really appreciate you tuning in.
This has been the Paycheck Paradox Podcast. We'll see you next time.